Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
George Orwell's 1945 novel story, Animal Farm, tells the tale of some animals on a farm, surprising, I know, who overthrow the human owners of that farm and set up their own rule with their own laws and their own leadership, the pigs. And most of their rules have to do with how not to be like those humans that they just got rid of, that they just overthrew, and how to treat one another with decency, not to harm one another, and most importantly, their final and principal rule that all animals are equal. But over the course of the story, those in charge bend the rules, break the rules, change the rules to secure more power for themselves, finally reducing the rule to the one now altered principle that all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. This was apparently a story, so I'm told, about communism, about the Soviet Union at the time, but it speaks much more broadly than that, which is, of course, why it is a classic story even now. A story about how the oppressed can become the oppressors. A story about how power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. A cautionary tale of how rules can be bent and broken and changed by those in power to legitimize their own bending and breaking and changing of the rules. And one that hits us in this visceral level around our understandings of fairness. We could apply it to many, many, many aspects of our world, of both the church and the society. We could talk about ways in which we believe that we are all equal, but some of us are more equal than others. And we could talk about ways in which we see that being played out and we react with this sense of indignance and unfairness. There's something in us from the time we are really little children. You heard them, right? The time we're really little children that we are almost obsessed with fairness. Maybe your mother, like mine, said, but whoever said that life was going to be fair? And yet that's what we crave. Fairness, justice, getting the same as everyone else, or getting what we think we're due, which might not be the same as everyone else, because after all, some of us are more equal than others. So we think, or so we feel. This story that Jesus tells, this example of what God's reign is like, what the kingdom of heaven is like, hits us at that really weird, visceral level in our understanding of fairness, of what's going on in this story. It's not the punchline that we're expecting, is it? And I think when we're honest, no matter how progressive or democratic socialist we think we are, or how open we think our minds and hearts are, or how deeply we think we understand the reign of God already, I confess that when I read this, I think, no, I'm with that first worker who was hired at the beginning of the day, who's been working since dawn in the hot sun in the vineyard. There's a part of me that says, now wait a second. That last worker did work only an hour. We spend a lot of time, for example, in our country, trying to make sure that people are assured an equal pay for an equal amount of work. Not an unequal pay for an equal amount of work, right? This is the other direction. This is equal pay for unequal work. And something about this affronts us. We can't quite figure it out. Now, I've told you that I resonate with Jacob, who wrestles with the unknown stranger all night until he receives a blessing, right? And that this is how I approach faith. So when I come to a story in the Bible that gives me this amount of pause or discomfort, that to me is a signal that it's time to roll up my sleeves and go deeper into this story. It's time to wrestle with this question and look at it again. Jesus says, this is what God's realm is like. God's reign. God's kingdom. Right? We like to, not just in the Lord's Prayer, and we like to drop the G in kingdom to make it even more embracing to say kingdom. It's a family. It's a human, living, breathing system. This is what it's like in God's kingdom. It's like when people are waiting to work for the day, and some get hired at the beginning of the day, and the employer agrees to pay them a fair living wage, a full day's wage for a full day's work. And then hires more people a few hours later, and a few hours after that, and a few hours after that, all the way up until it's almost quitting time. And at the end of the day, when the first worker who was the last worker hired comes forward, the manager gives that person a full day's pay for that 1 hour of work. Okay, I'm good at this point. I'm still with you on this story. God's grace, I get the metaphor. God's grace is so big, is so huge that for even just 1 hour, God pours out the fullness of grace upon somebody. I'm good. With you. And then the next person comes and they get the same measure, the same payment. And the next, and the next, and the next. Until the person who was hired first and has worked the most receives that full day's wage. But suddenly I'm not so comfortable with the story anymore. I've lost track, I think, of what we're trying to say about the realm of God. I think I need to go deeper. I'm convinced we would understand God, understand faith, understand the life we're called to lead better if we could understand this story a little bit better. But this is a concern that pops up all over the place. This is a concern about justice that comes up over and over again in our society. Equal marriage. By making other marriages equal, there are those who feel that that somehow undermines theirs. Now, you all went there with me on that, all right? Immigration. By making it easier or simpler or streamlining the ways in which some people can come into this country and stay and have the rights of citizenship, instead of going to the back of the line if they violated something. Now, you see where I'm going? We get a little sticky, don't we? People say, oh, no, wait a minute. You got to play by the rules, and you got to get there early in the morning and be hired in line, in order, the way you're supposed to be. That's what's fair. This is how we work. We understand this model. And this flips all of that on its head. Equal pay for unequal work. The full measure of a day's wage for an hour's worth of labor, or 2 or 3 hours worth of labor. It blows our little minds. It pops a fuse somewhere in our brains. Because we start asking ultimately the wrong question. We're looking at that work and that pay. We're looking at what the person has done and what they have earned. We've begun to think that what our work is worth is what we can earn for it. We begin to think that the value of what we do is the value of what we are paid. And if what we did was less, then what we get paid should be less. And if what we did was more, then what we get paid should be more. Otherwise, what we've done is devalued. And we don't like that. It's important to us. We did our work. We lived our life. We did it with integrity and with hard labor. And we don't want that to be diminished and devalued. That makes sense. It's a question, though, that begins to problematize the people. We hear this question toward the end. Why are you still standing around the marketplace, not working? And the people respond, we haven't been hired. Well, those folks should just go out and get themselves a decent job now, shouldn't they? Well, that's what they were trying to do. They were standing in the marketplace to be hired. But we don't ever ask the question, why did the system not hire them? If the employer needed all those people to staff the vineyard for the day, why not hire them all at the beginning of the day? That's a fair question. When we start thinking about who works for what and gets paid what, we're problematizing those people who are working and getting paid instead of asking, what about this system is making people work in unequal ways? That's a fair question to ask. Instead, we need to kind of step back and look at the systems of injustice and ask ourselves, why are some people starting out on an unequal playing field? And how do we help mitigate this so that all people could receive a day's wage, which is also what you need to eat? Let us say our daily bread, so to speak. Now we're starting to get in trouble. Because the story we know is not about how much people are paid for how much work they do. We know this is a metaphor. We know this is a story about God's grace. And when we apply to God's grace the same standards and measures that we would apply to what people are paid for what they do, we can start to see the problem we're in. It's a real problem. It's a problem that people in Jesus' day had and that we have still. Because we do think, spiritually, still, that some people are more equal than others. So let's imagine that the landowner is God. And let's imagine that the workers in the vineyard are those people who are laboring in God's kingdom. That's a pretty easy assumption. And let's assume that the money, that the day's wage, that the fullness of what you'd be paid for the day is the fullness of God's grace. And let's assume that the work that you do is your life, the fullness of your life, your humanity. And some of us seem to come into a place where that's recognized right off the bat, our full humanity. And we receive the full measure of God's grace, and that makes sense. But for some folk, it takes some time to get to that place where their humanity is recognized and lifted up. But do they receive the fullness of God's grace any less? Oh no, we say, of course not. This was a question. This is a question for people in Jesus' day. This was a question for the people at the time the Bible was written. You see, there were all of these folk who had been the chosen people of God for generations, the children of Israel. They were the chosen people of God, and they always had been. They'd followed the rules. They'd listened to the prophets. They'd lived their lives according to God's teachings. And then Jesus comes along and teaches some new ways of living according to God's law. And well, there were some people who followed right from the very beginning. First thing in the morning, those first disciples, they were up and at it, living the Christian life, living the Jesus way. But then there were others. Then there were others who took some time to hear this message, who heard it and rejected it. There were those who were not born into the faith of the people of Israel, but were Roman or pagan of some variety and stripe in the area. Are they to receive the same full measure of God's grace? It was a question. What about those who, let's take for example, that guy named Saul, who went around persecuting all of the followers of Jesus for years? They lived in fear of this man who would turn them in until he himself had a conversion not quite a deathbed conversion, but a conversion late in his life, and felt himself transformed and became an apostle out of time. For Jesus, does he receive the full measure of God's grace? Or is grace a commodity like money, like living wage, that we have to quite literally rob from Peter, a follower of Jesus from the very beginning, to pay Paul, a latecomer in the faith? As if grace runs out. As if Paul's humanity and faith and fullness of life is any less for having started later than Peter's. But this was a question. And we have these hypothetical questions now, you know we do. When we sit and we ponder, what about that person who lives their life, the good life, the Christian life, their whole life? They do everything they can to follow the example and teaching of Jesus. And what about that person who doesn't, but has what we like to call a deathbed conversion experience? Is it fair? Is it fair for the fullness of grace to be poured upon that person? We do ask ourselves that question. What about those expressions of faith that are different from ours? Because, you know, we do think that we have the right one. I know I have the right one for me. But we do have this little bit of arrogance that seeps into us where I think, well, if everyone were just a progressive United Methodist like me, we'd be in pretty good shape. They'd be in pretty good shape. I think that sometimes. Is the full measure of God's grace poured out on those who live out their faith in ways different, if not unrecognizable to me? I struggle with that, but I'm back to the same question, and it's the wrong question. Is God's grace this finite thing that gets poured out on each of us according to our merit? It's so hard for us to break out of that pattern. This story forces us to ask a new question, or to tear up our questions and start from a whole new premise. Because when we ask a question about wages and earnings and what our work is worth, and then we apply that to humanity and grace and what we are worth, we have started from the wrong premise. We cannot quantify our humanity, our faith, our worth in God's eyes. And the full measure of God's grace is not a measure of who we are, but a measure of who God is. Is it not up to God to decide what to do with God's own grace? And it doesn't come with a quantity as if to say, well, if you had that much grace to begin with, then why did you barter with me for such a small amount? I want more than somebody else. Because I am more equal. My faith is more equal. My work is more equal. My humanity is more equal than someone else's. We've started from the wrong premise. We've problematized us. And we've limited God's grace into a commodity. Problematized people, commoditized grace. I want more than a day's worth. More than my daily bread, more than the fullness of God's grace. For surely, my faith is worth more. My humanity is worth more. We have started with the wrong premise. This story tells us that we have to tear up that question. Not just reapply our rubric, reapply our metaphor in some different way. The question itself is wrong. What if we start instead with the assumption? With the assumption that each person is fully human, fully valuable, fully beloved, no matter what. And with the assumption that God's grace is unlimited but is also fully sufficient, that there is no more and less, that it cannot be chopped up into little pieces, and that God's full love poured out upon one person in no way diminishes God's full love poured out upon me. We have such a hard time holding that concept in our minds, let alone in our hearts. Because for our whole lives, we think of fairness as that which means equal distribution for equal merit. And what if what Jesus is saying is, you're asking the wrong question? Or you're asking a question when you should be making an assumption. An assumption not about you and your worth, or about the fullness or limits or commodities that you want and need, but an assumption about God and God's grace. And an assumption about humanity, your humanity, and the humanity of the person sitting next to you, and the humanity of the person across the globe. Make the assumption that all are fully human, precious, beloved in God's sight, and that God's grace never runs dry. That the fullness of grace and love and mercy poured upon one person in no way diminishes the fullness of love and grace and mercy poured upon you. Start with the assumption that when God promises you the fullness of your daily bread, the fullness of your love and grace and abundance given to you, that God gives to you, that this is all there is. And this is sufficient. And may we rejoice when someone else receives that blessing and that fullness, rather than wonder if that in any way diminishes us. Can we put aside our question of how we would chop up and parcel out God's love and grace, and start with the assumption that that which is uncontainable from the creation of the universe cannot be parceled out? That in the eyes of God, we are more than equal. We are full and complete. And no one can be more fully human than anyone else, and no one can be more fully blessed than to receive the fullness of God's complete grace. May we wrestle, may we sit in that. May we see that God's fairness, God's fullness are a challenge, but a gift for all.